Welcome to Career Tools. This week, Mark's College Talk, Part 1. Here we go. Folks, we don't have a college product per se, but if you have a son or daughter at college, and they're a junior or senior, really even a sophomore, or you yourself are listening in college, if so, well done you. Probably our best product for college kids would be our interviewing series. It's over 50 podcasts in which we lay out all the details in excruciating detail about how to be successful in interviews. And it does apply to fresh college graduates. There's not that much difference other than the level of your experience. And we highly recommend it. Your college guidance office is probably not preparing you well. So come to our website and check out the interviewing series. Okay, Wendy, so we have a special treat this time. I recently gave my talk, my annual talk at Northwestern University. I used to give it all over the country, but I've just gotten too busy. For college seniors, usually, and also, frankly, MBA students. I've done this at a bunch of MBA schools. If you can think of a top 20 MBA schools, I've presented this or a version of this there over the last 20 years or so. My good friend Bill White, a former CEO, is now an engineering professor at Northwestern University and asked me to come every year. This year, I actually had to do it by video from my office because of my wife was recuperating from surgery and I didn't want to leave. So I get asked to talk about helping seniors get ready for their interviews, usually happening in the fall of their senior year at major universities.
And remind me, which year is senior? Fourth year, right?
Fourth year, yes. 4 years in college. That's an unusual question. I assume it has to do with your nationality. I don't know.
Yes.
or your accent. So the title of the presentation is Interviewing and Starting Your Professional Life. I used to do only interviewing, and then I told the various colleges that I was frustrated that in partially my fault and partially theirs, young people were graduating with less and less ability to integrate into the professional world. And so I wanted to make some suggestions, not just about getting a job, but how to keep a job and how to start a professional life once you're out of school.
That's nothing to do with millennials or what are we on? Are we on Gen Z yet?
Gen Z.
It's just young people coming out of college don't know stuff.
Yes. As we like to remind people, the oldest millennial is 38. So the idea that you're blaming young people difficulties you have on millennials is sort of ludicrous. All 40-year-olds have thought that 20-year-olds could be a little bit sharper, and all 60-year-olds since the beginning of time thought that 20-year-olds were spoiled rotten. it's normal. There are news articles about that in 1895. So it's not some new thing. Anyway, my talk has three parts. First of all, I address how to prepare to interview, the things you can do, and this is a condensed version of one of the behind the paywall casts in our interviewing series called The General Store Analogy, which I'll try to lay out briefly for everybody. Next, we'll talk about the five phases of interviewing, if you cut out preparation as being essentially the sixth phase. And then after that, just some brief comments about making the transition from being a college or uni student to becoming a young professional.
Cool.
Okay, so here we go. How would I prepare? What would I do if I were a student now, knowing that I was going to have to interview in my senior year? Now, to be clear, if I knew all this 6 months before, I would have done a nice, easy, slow ramp up to the process. And I would have done a little bit of this over the summer, hopefully in an internship, and I would be doing it on weekends. I was not a party animal in college. Of course, there were no party animals where I went to school. I wasn't educated. I was trained. But The first thing that will help me with my preparation is to get on the other side of the table and understand how recruiters think. So I want to share with you how recruiters think, and then we can work backwards from that, saying, okay, if that's the way they think, if that's what they want, if that's what they're looking for, how do I present myself in a way that shows what I want to show? Now, to be clear, this isn't gaming the system. This isn't cheating. This is communication is what the listener does. And so therefore, I want to understand the point of view of the person that I'm trying to persuade. The better I can understand the person on the other side of the table, the more likely I'm going to be able to communicate in a language they understand. And the fact is, even if I'm massively good at this process, if I don't have the right skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics, all the communication skills in the world are not going to get me hired. And the reason for that is the way recruiters think. If I'm a hiring manager or a recruiter, if I'm traveling to a school, I'm probably a manager, a human resources manager, or recruiter for a company. If I'm recruiting another professional, I'm probably a hiring manager. The way I think is I have an opening. I'm trying to fill that pain of an open position or the opportunity of an open position. And in my mind, I have one overarching question. Can you do the job? That's it. Now, look, there are ancillary parts to that, such as, are you a fit for our culture? Do I like you? There are several ancillary things, but fundamentally, all those things fit around, can you do the job? Are you capable of being effective at the job? And most managers, most hiring managers, recruiters, HR people, so on, think in terms of external and internal characteristics about candidates. We think about skills and abilities. Those are external things, things that we can do, and traits and characteristics. Those are internal things. How you think, how you feel, what's important to you, okay? Are you flippant or are you serious? Are you friendly or are you dour? Are you warm or are you logical, cold, and distant? And frankly, all of those can be okay, but you can't have traits and characteristics that don't align with what I think of as what the job needs. Okay, so I've got this opening. I'm sitting across the table from you, and I'm asking myself as I'm staring at you, interviewing you, not, by the way, not trying to stress you out. Most professional hiring managers, most professional managers know that there's already enough stress in interviewing. You don't need to add to it. In fact, not only do you not need to add to it, it doesn't help, but actually decreases the likelihood that you're going to be hiring well. So I'm asking, can this person do the job? And in my head, I've already gone through the previous four or five people that might have had the job if I've been in the role for any time, and known what their strengths and weaknesses are, known what made them good and what they didn't have. If I'm an HR person and I don't really know the people who have done the job or how well they've done them, I probably have a good analysis of the kind of skills and traits and abilities and characteristics, external and internal, that we look for in people. And again, I'm looking for those things in you. Okay, so now I ask myself the next question. Essentially, historically, what we've done in large organizations is we've said to ourselves, okay, of all the possible ways we could find out whether or not this person can do this job, I think I have a list of what the skills and traits and abilities and characteristics necessary for this job. How can I find out whether or not this person has them or not? And if you don't know, if you've been listening for a while, you do know the standard for modern high level. And by high level, I don't mean executive. I simply mean high quality, high performance, high repeatability, high likelihood of a good prediction. The model for effective interviewing is the behavioral interview. We believe that the best way to predict that you are going to be able to do a job in the future is either A, have you done that job in the past, or lacking the job, we've learned actually you don't need to have had the job in the past. There's that old, the job requires experience and I don't have any experience, so it's a catch-22. But rather, we simply have deconstructed the job into skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics, and we're going to ask you for other things you've done in your life and see whether or not you actually have proven that you have the skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics that we're looking for in this job. They may be atomized, if you will, over 6 or 7 different other accomplishments, some of which are not professional, maybe none of which are professional at all, but it doesn't matter.
And to be clear, we're not about to tell candidates to make these up or to somehow have stories. Like, once you've worked out what the recruiter wants, your job isn't then to make things up so that you get the job. It's to look at your own experience that you have and see whether or not that fits the job. And if your experience doesn't fit the job, then don't apply for it and don't go to the interview, because even if you got that job based on the stories you'd made up, you'll be miserable in it.
Yeah.
Because you can't do it and people will know within a week, and you'll just, it's horrible. It's a horrible place to be. And so when we're not looking at what the recruiter wants or the hiring manager wants in order to kind of somehow create this persona of the perfect person for that job, we're going to look at our actual skills and abilities and traits and characteristics and see whether they fit before we get to the interview.
Yeah, I probably would have described it as don't lie. Yeah, we actually have a podcast, don't we, called Horseman's Wager? I think that, isn't that the podcast?
I think it's in the interview series, so I don't think it's public.
Yeah, it's not public. Okay, it's behind the paywall. Well, yeah, the idea is, imagine going to an interview and faking who you are and then getting turned down. And then maybe thinking to yourself, gee, I wonder if I'd have just been myself, whether they would have liked me. Or worse, faking it, getting an offer, and then taking it and discover you wasted 3 or 6 months of your life because you're not in the right place. The right thing to do, the bet to make in an interview, is to bet on yourself, to be yourself. And if they say no, it's a legit no. You don't belong there, in their estimation. And they do get a say. And if you do get hired there, you're much more likely to be in alignment with cultural skills and so on, and you'll be fine. Yeah, but it would be the height of stupidity and a tragedy to play somebody you're not, get an offer and take it, or worse, play somebody you're not and not get an offer and wonder, gee.
If only.
Yeah, if only, yes. So I'm sitting here across from you, and I'm looking for a human being who's carrying around skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics. And behind me, sort of in my head, I have a series of skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics that I'm hoping you can fill. The analogy we like to use is an old-fashioned storekeeper in the West of the late 1800s in the United States, where they, you know, the venue of most cowboy movies in America, Clint Eastwood, John Wayne, Henry Fonda, whomever. And in that movie, there was a general store, and there was a guy, probably in his spouse, in aprons, one of them standing behind the counter. And behind him or her, there are cubbyholes filled with all sorts of goods. There are bolts of cloth, and there are licorice, and there are bolts, and there are
fake medicine that won't do you any good.
Potions and lotions and serums and oils and probably some chocolate, which is really expensive. I remember that from a movie, a Western movie I really like. In any event, I'm staring at you from behind my counter asking you, you know, here are the open cubbies for this role. Do you have them or not? And the cubbies are labeled with things like leadership, perseverance, ability to write code in Python, be able to write code in Drupal, ability to run a QA test on code, ability to design a test and then run it and then report on the test. Project management, resource control. I mean, there could be, there are tens of thousands of these things. And of course, the manager probably has 5 or 6 or 7, and 1 or 2, maybe 3 are super important to him or her. Now, you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, why doesn't he just ask me about leadership, or why doesn't he ask me about project planning? Well, that would be dumb, because we would say, give me an example of your project planning experience. We don't want to do that. We think you should have thought ahead enough to know that that's not the way people communicate, and that would be handing the interview on a silver platter to those people who are willing to lie. So we eliminate that possibility by asking you to choose what accomplishments you have from your background, because accomplishments require skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics. And we are going to listen to your accomplishments and see what skills, traits, abilities, characteristics they prove you have, and see whether or not those are a match for the cubbies behind us in our general store.
So we're looking for outcomes rather than, like, I could list the fact that I'm a great project manager, but unless I have an outcome that proves that I'm a great project manager, I am going to be useless in the interview. The interviewer isn't going to have anything to believe, no evidence that I am a great project manager if I just say that I am. But if I can prove it by saying I brought a project in on time, on budget, in scope, then they know, or they're more sure, that I have those skills and abilities that they're looking for.
Exactly. If you asked me what the best product we have is for long-term professional growth, it would be a manager tools license. It's $200 a year. Give you access to all of the show notes for all the podcasts every year. The podcasts are free, but oftentimes you don't have time to listen. Many people tell me that if they're just starting, there are 1,200 casts to catch up on. And the way you'd catch up is you'd get a license. And that would give you access to all the show notes. So you can read through the show notes in what would take 10 minutes on your phone, on your iPad, your Surface tablet. You can print them out if you want. You can save yourself a bunch of time from me rambling. So check out our licenses. All right, you're facing me. I've got these cubby holes I want you to fill behind me. How do you get ready for that? Well, here's how. You're going to spend some time cataloging and then analyzing your accomplishments from the previous, say, 5-10 years of your life. How do you do this? Well, I started giving this talk a long time ago. I leave this part in because it's very vintage or retro, which makes it cool. Some of you are going to roll your eyes and say, no, you're just old, which is probably true. I'm 60, but I'm still working harder than you are, so I don't feel so bad about being old. I still feel 25. But what we're going to use is 3x5 cards. And the reason is because they don't run out of battery and because they're easy to work with. And we're kidding about the technology. If you have a simple piece of software, ideally that will run on your phone that would allow you to do this, it's fine. There's no problem with that at all. But you're going to see we're going to manipulate the data a little bit, and it'll get a little bit tricky unless you know what you're doing and the right piece of software. So plan on spending a half an hour or 45 minutes on 2 consecutive nights in the next few days, and you're going to sit down wherever you sit down. You're going to close your laptop. You're going to, unless you're using software on it, you're going to turn off text messaging, Instagram, Facebook, all the other stuff, and you're going to actually focus. And if you're not willing to do that, don't complain to me that you can't get a job when companies come to interview on your campus, because you're so addicted to FOMO, fear of missing out, that you're not willing to put in the hard work, the necessary work, to be effective at the artificial reality of interviewing. It doesn't matter what GPA you got in school. It doesn't matter whether you studied engineering or liberal arts or sociology or anything else, if you can't get through an interview. Even for a startup, one of your friends runs, if she's smart, she won't just hire you, because then the other people will think, did he or she just get hired because her friend started the company? You ought to be telling your friend, we need to do an interview so that people will know that I know what I'm doing. Regardless, you're going to have to focus for 30 to 45 minutes, two nights, the way hopefully you would for a midterm or a final. And you are going to catalog accomplishments, thinking back over your history. Probably we're going to combine high school and college, and then also your work or extracurricular activities. And you're going to ask yourself, what are my significant accomplishments from that time? What did I do in college? Maybe it's a grade you got that people thought would be really hard. Maybe it's a project that was voted best in class. Maybe there's a long-form essay that you wrote that won an award, even if it's third place, but you had to manage your time and so on. Maybe you were valedictorian of high school. Maybe you were, in the top 10% of your class, which gave you the right to go to a certain state school, which allowed your parents to afford college. Maybe it's getting enough scholarships, planning and getting enough scholarships so that you could afford to go at all. All those things would be reasonable within the academic undergraduate and high school experience. Okay. You'd write all those down. I'd like to think you'd have 20 of them. Don't worry. Don't beat yourself up that they're too small. We'll worry about small later. You probably won't have to use but 5 or 6 or 7 of these. But what you don't want to do is think, oh, I'm going to pick the best 5, 6, or 7, because you don't know yet which ones will be the best. You're then going to do the same thing the next night. And by the way, all you're capturing is the accomplishment. You may be able to do this in 20 minutes. If you got a boatload of accomplishment, you may be able to do it in 5 or 10 minutes. And you may say, well, I'll go right from academic to non-academic and I'll be done in one night. Good for you. It can be done. And then you'll do the same thing for non-academic. You know, were you captain of a team? Did your team win district or region or state or national championships? Did you have an individual performance that was noteworthy in track or field or debate or marching band or classical piano, whatever the case might be? Maybe you led a group. Maybe you started a program to serve your community. Maybe you started a charity to serve a particular need that you identified in society. I want you to capture those. Let's assume you have 20 of those that span the last 10 or so years of your life, maybe 8 years of your life. You don't need to tell us how impressive you are when you were 7 years old. It sounds a little too precious. We think your parents probably had a lot to do with it. Sorry, but that's what we think. We're entitled to our biases. Okay. Now, for each one of those, when you're thinking about it, you can start with a single sheet of paper if you want, but at some point, I want you to separate each one of those accomplishments onto the front of a 3x5 card or your electronic equivalent. So before you start phase two of this, which is the analysis, you should have as many 3x5 cards as you have accomplishments. And you write down what the accomplishment was, and then maybe one or two things that you remember of the doing of it, but nothing more. You probably wouldn't want more than 30 or 40 words on the front of that 3x5 card. Now, once you've done that, and you're ready to do it, so again, you've got 20 and 20, let's say. We have 40 3x5 cards. I want you to take each one. I want you to flip it over. And it's important that you don't do this for each one when you're thinking about writing on the original a 3x5 card. You wait until all of them are done. In other words, you're going to process your memory about accomplishments first, and now we're moving to process your memory about each of those accomplishments and the skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics. If you try to do accomplishment and then skills, accomplishment and skills, we've tested it. We've done it both ways, and it works far better to be thinking only of accomplishments and then switch and say, now let's think only of external and internal capabilities, skills and abilities, traits and characteristics. And so now I'm looking at the accomplishment. I'm saying, okay, what does that prove I have? Okay, it might be smart if you're thinking about 5 or 10 companies that you may want to interview with. Ask yourself about the kind of things they're looking for.
And to cheat, you can Google skills and abilities and resume Action Words is another list of, of things that will help. And also go to the places that you want to work for. Go to their websites and look at the jobs, because there will be clues about, if you have no idea what skill something proves and you need like a list to start you off, then those three places will help you understand what the concept of a skill is for a company.
Yes. So now on the back of each one, I'm going to write down 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe even as many as 10 skills or abilities, traits or characteristics that this accomplishment shows, doesn't prove, doesn't make you the best at. Again, don't overjudge yourself. Don't beat yourself up and say, none of these are any good. I'll never get a job. We hear that all the time. We don't need you to hit a home run every time you're up in baseball, okay? We're fine with singles, okay? There are too many young people who have absolutely fantastic accomplishments and then can't communicate effectively in an interview and don't get the job. Now, some of you are probably saying, you know, this interviewing, it's, you know, gosh, it's medieval. Actually, no, it's not. It's very effective. We've been teaching interviewing. I've been teaching interviewing for nearly 30 years. Now, there is a joke for those of us who want to get cynical, which is interviewing is the second worst form of deciding whom to hire, and all the others are tied for last. The highest prediction rate we have for determining true positives, people we should have said yes to that we did, and true negatives, people we said no to that we should have said no to, as opposed to false positives, hiring somebody who turns out bad, which is hell on earth, or false negatives, obviously missing somebody who would have been good, is behavioral interviewing. Now, it's not perfect, but you'll get better at it once you get hired and start having your own job. You'll understand how good it works.
Should we give an example?
Sure. Like,
so let me see. So Drake, your son worked at Subway, right? For a while. So if he, we could say.
Employee of the week.
Employee of the week. There you go.
He's employee of the week. Now look, and I know what people are thinking right now. You know, I went to Northwestern. I went to Harvard. I went to Cornell. And then we'll include some second-rate schools. I went to the Air Force Academy. I went to Navy. No, I'm kidding, guys. Respect to the other Academy graduates out there. You might be thinking, oh, Employee of the Week, that was such a joke. You don't know that. You don't. Now, we're not looking for pretty certificates, but here's the way Drake would analyze it. He'd write down on the front, Employee of the Week, okay? Subway, September, you know, 2012, making that up. Okay. When it comes time, the second, when he's going through all of his conference, he turns it over and says, you know, timeliness, courtesy.
Ability to follow the rules.
Yeah, follow the rules. Quality, didn't have any complaints about sandwiches.
Customer service, the ability to understand orders.
Yes. And maybe even something about economy or budget, because he made the sandwiches correctly. And his manager complimented him on that. Maybe team spirit, because he took an extra shift at the last minute. He said, yeah, sure, I'll come in. And I remember Drake actually complaining about the fact that he always went for his shifts and then he had to pick up other people's shifts because they just called in and said, yeah, I don't want to come. And I said, don't, you know, whatever you do, show up. anyway, so now he's got an accomplishment, which doesn't seem all that great, but it doesn't matter. And he's got, let's say, 8 skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics. He does that for every single accomplishment. Okay. Now, remember, we've got 40 accomplishments. And let's assume we have 10 skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics for each one. It doesn't matter. Some will have 3. Some will have 19. Again, it doesn't matter. And then what we're going to do is we're going to make as many copies of that 3x5 card, however you want to do it, and as there are accomplishments, skills, traits, and abilities on the back. So for this one, let's say, again, I'll change the thing and say he has 10. There are 10 skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics that Drake has associated with getting Subway Employee of the Week. He makes 10 copies of that 3x5 card, and now he separates those 10 copies, each one of them, into a stack that is named after the trait or characteristic that it proves he had. Customer service, following the rules, timeliness, economy, whatever you want to name them. And it's okay if you end up with cards and stacks that are named with fairly widespread titles like economy, budgeting, husbanding of resources. It doesn't matter. That's okay. Because managers aren't that precise about how they're thinking about the job in detail. Now you see what you've got is in the case of 20 from academic, 20 from non-academic, you've got 40 times 10. That's 400 cards. But now instead of being stacked by accomplishment, all of the accomplishments that relate to leadership, all the accomplishments that relate to timeliness, all the accomplishments that relate to planning are all together. Now, yes, each accomplishment is represented 10 times in those, let's say there are 20 different types of skills, abilities, and characteristics. And now if you take those stacks and just imagine that they're not sitting on a table, but now the table is rotated vertically so that it's perpendicular to the way it was before, and the stacks are sticking out in front of the table as if they were glued to it. You see what you have is something like a card catalog file. And there's a drawer for leadership and one for economy and one for customer service and one for planning and one for communication skills and one for technical knowledge and engineering, another one for building a network. One is for persuasion, whatever the case might be.
So what we've done is filled all those cubbyholes that the general store guy had with examples of those traits that were named in that the cubbyhole was named.
Yes. And the goal, of course, is that let's say you have 20 different skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics listed. You have to be thinking about the job that you're going to be interviewing for and ask yourself, which of those skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics are needed by this company? And now what you're going to do is you're going to go through those cards, if you will, and ask yourself, what are the accomplishments that I am going to especially study so that I can deliver, so I can tailor my background as much as possible to this particular company's needs? Simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody needs leadership, if you know they're wanting leadership because they're hiring you for a supervisory, a managerial job, or a project planning job or whatever, you're going to go through the leadership thing and say, which one of these show me in the best possible light? Which ones are the strongest? And of those, which ones include other traits, abilities, and characteristics? Because every single one of those cards is going to have an accomplishment on the front and all of its related skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics on the back. Okay. And if you think about it, those cubbies behind the general store, the fellow or gal who owns the general store, it's the same thing. It's a series of connections you have to make between the atomized analysis of the job and the atomized analysis of your past.
And it sounds like an awful lot of work, but the worst thing in an interview is when somebody asks you a question and you have no example and you just sit there and you're desperately trying to think. And of course, trying to think of things when you're desperate, like nothing comes to mind. You could completely blank mind, have no idea what you can say as the answer. But whereas if you've done this, it's not even that you only have one answer. You have five to choose from.
Yeah. Well, what's more, if you've done this well, you're not worried about the next question you're going to get in an interview. If you've done this part and the next part, which is practicing delivering the answers, you're not worried. You're not stressed before the answer comes. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. We often say when it comes to interviewing, it's okay to make a mistake. We don't mind mistakes when we interview people, folks. What we mind is somebody making a mistake, and it could be an error of omission or it could be an error of commission. Doesn't matter. And then we can tell that you get stressed or frustrated or embarrassed or ashamed, and now you tend to shrink into yourself and you feel terrible. And the voice in your head is saying, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, I screwed up, I'm never gonna get this job. And then because you're so busy barking at yourself or whining at yourself in your own head, you don't hear our next question. And now you've made two mistakes. And it only gets worse from there.
You're going to screw up when you get a job.
Yeah.
like it happens. Screwing up in an interview isn't ideal, but it's also not the end of the world. The same way as screwing up at work isn't usually the end of the world. And everybody does it.
Yeah. I'll give you a good example. People tell me all the time, I'm so afraid when I start doing practicing my behavioral interviewing answers that I'll be interrupted, which you will be interrupted. And you have to know your answers well enough to know where you were in the narrative to be able to handle the interruption and come back. And they're worried. They say, I'm worried that the people will interrupt. And then when I come back, I won't remember where I am. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, no offense, but think about your real life. You take a little tangential detour, or somebody interrupts you, asks a question, and you say to them afterwards, where was I? Right? It happens all the time. And so if that happens to you in an interview, it's not like it's the kiss of death. You just say, you know what? I'm sorry. I can't remember where I was. And the recruiter will, I think you were talking about meeting with a professor. Oh, yeah. I'll pick up from there. That's normal conversation. It's no big deal. If you're stressing about that going into an interview, you are making it harder on yourself. It has nothing to do with the interview. This is not some Byzantine, we have a thousand traps to catch you kind of thing. We respect normal conversation. It's okay. If you forget my name, I don't mind. I really don't. Now, if you never use my name in an interview, that's probably not good. But again, it's not the kiss of death. And don't think that you can have weak behavioral accomplishments and then schmooze me by remembering my name and saying it four times. Saying my name and smiling and having a sense of humor is nice. All those things are good, but they're much more icing than they are cake.
Mm-hmm.
Cake is behavioral interviewing question answers. Now, we've got these accomplishments, and now we need to practice them. Now, before I go into how to answer these questions at a high level, we'll talk about that in the five phases of all interviews. I want to explain to you how to practice. This is still the preparation phase. Remember, that's what we said we'd start with. So, every day, I want you to have the assumption that as you walk to school, walk into practice in the morning, whatever, 3-5 to biking, 10 minutes, whatever, you're going to record yourself. You could do it on your phone. We used to carry dictaphones years ago. And you're going to record yourself every morning with one version, one attempt at a question called Tell Me About Yourself, which I'll lay out in a moment. And the second question is, give me an example of a significant accomplishment. You're going to rotate through your accomplishments, and that's why you need the 3-5 cards or some other piece of software that would allow you to quickly scan through them. You could outline them if you wanted. And every single day, you're going to audio tape yourself. You're going to start and say, hey, it's Wednesday morning. Here's my tell me about yourself answer. And as you walk, as you ride, as you sit on the subway car, whatever, you're on the train, you're going to say, okay, here's my answer. I was born, blah, 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 blah. Okay. An accomplishment I'm most proud of is blah, 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 blah. And it's probably going to take you 10, 15 minutes tops. You're going to record, and then you're not going to listen to yourself until that evening. If you try to critique yourself or learn how well you did in the 5 minutes after you recorded, you will thank your Pavarotti. You rock. You're like the greatest ever because your mind is still in the same place. You wait all day and you listen to the answer. Oh my gosh, completely different story, night and day. Okay. And your tell me about yourself answer will get better and better and better. Now, let me caution you. Some of you are thinking, oh, well, I can't do that because I'll sound rehearsed. There is no way on God's green earth that you will sound rehearsed to an interviewer. The people that sound rehearsed are the people that fool themselves into believing that they can memorize every single word of an answer. But you are not giving a speech. You're not out on the stump. You'll have an outline of the answer, and you'll use different words every time you deliver it. It will never sound rehearsed. It will sound prepared. It will sound researched, which is what we expect from you, because these are the two biggest questions you'll get in any interview ever. Tell me about yourself and give me some significant accomplishments. Significant accomplishments is more important because you're going to get that one 3, 4, 5, 6 times. But tell me about yourself is the first big question you get in an interview. And we use it to determine whether or not we're dealing with an amateur or a professional.
And you're not supposed to sound in an interview like you're doing it off the top of your head.
Right? No.
It's not supposed to sound like, oh, that's the first time I've ever thought about that question. It's supposed to sound like I prepared for this and therefore I know what my answer is.
Yeah, because I want to look in the best possible light. Why wouldn't I prepare for something that since I'm here, clearly I'm telling you I'm interested in?
Yeah.
Okay. You're doing that audio every day, critique every morning, critique every night. And then videotaping yourself once a week. You can use your iPhone, your whatever, your Pixel Galaxy, whatever, and you'll set it on a stand or prop it up across from you and turn it on. And then you'll run over and sit down and you'll say, okay, here's my tell me about yourself answer. And then when you're done with that, you'll say, okay, here's my significant accomplishment answer for this week. And I'm focusing on this one that I think is one of my best accomplishments. And then you'll deliver both of them following the guidance we're about to give you. Now, don't watch that video till the next morning. Same thing. If you watch the video right after you recorded it, it'll seem terrible. Okay. Now, if you don't have a lot of time before your interviews, maybe it's October. And so maybe you're up against it. You could record in the morning, audio in the morning, and then record video at night. You could do it. And typically I would bet that out of the 100 students that I talk to every time I give this kind of presentation, it used to be several hundred at the graduate schools, I would say that 20 of them follow through. The vast majority just
really?
Sort of, yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't have put it that high. I'd have said 5.
No, I'm still in touch with folks that saw presentations,
fair enough.
15, 20 years ago. So, so audio every day, video once a week, unless you're pressed for time. Okay, and that's the end of our first part, and now we have to go on to the 5 phases of interview. That's it, everybody. Come back next week for the continuation of Mark's College Talk. See you then.